welcome to the Camp Constitution Report on Catching Fire News and Camp Constitution Radio on WBCQ The Planet. This show is brought to you by Camp Constitution, and to learn more about Camp Constitution, please visit our website, campconstitution.net, where you will find a whole treasure trove of great resources and information, a link to our YouTube channel with well over 1,000 videos, the Sam Blumenfeld Archive, a great resource for educators, teachers, homeschoolers, etc., and a calendar of activities and events that we'll be attending or hosting over the next several months. And if you go to look at some of our videos from the last 2 years, you will find some by from our guest, Pastor David Whitney. How are you doing, Pastor David?
I'm doing great, Hal. Thank you so much for having me on the show.
Well, it's interesting that I've known about your work. You actually with the AmericanView.com and also the Institute on the Constitution based in Pasadena, Maryland. And I think it was about over 10, maybe 15 years ago, I actually visited the office there in Pasadena. I met with Michael, the head of the Peruca, yes, Mike Peruca, who plays the saxophone, I understand. And so I've known of your work, and it was my good friend up in Northern Maine, Barb Roy, who encouraged me to get to know you a little better. And when you were coming up to New England to pick up your daughter, who had been hiking the Appalachian Trail, I got a chance to meet you, your wife, and your daughter. And you were at camp in the last 2 years, 20 and 21 and 22. And we're so pleased to have you. You're just, I would say, a national treasure. So tell us a little bit about yourself, and then some personal background, and then we'll talk about the great work that you do.
Well, thank you so much, Hal. I've been a pastor for about 40 years at this point in time, and always been involved actively in what's happening in the culture, you know, protesting against the murder of the unborn in the womb, and seeking to see that changed in our states. So I've been active for many years trying to push back against the leftist agenda, both in terms of babies in the womb, but also the larger agenda that we see happening in the schools, and we see attacks on the family, a number of different ways in which we actually know that what God wants to have established in our culture is being under attack. So as a pastor, was getting our congregation involved in these things, and I got involved at the Institute on the Constitution, where we, as pastors in Maryland, fought against the first pro-sodomite piece of legislation that was passed by Governor Glenn Denning back in the year 2000. And we had done what most people thought was not possible, completed what was a referendum process when a law in Maryland passes both houses, is signed by the governor, and the people have an option at that point to force that piece of legislation to go on the ballot in November. But that referendum process is very difficult to accomplish. 60,000 ballot signatures in 60 days, and the organization was non-existent. We had no money, but we accomplished it by God's grace. And then the sodomites, they pulled out their trump card, which was a judge who basically came up with a ruling out of his own standard, not anything in the Constitution, not anything in law, and that standard he created throughout most of the signatures such that the ballot referendum then failed. And I was in court that day and very rather upset by all the work that we had done being thrown out by a judge. And that was the day that Michael Peruca had brought his children, whom he was homeschooling, he'd brought them into court to show them, here's what's happening in court. Here's a real live incident. And he also wanted to meet me as well as some of the other leaders in this movement of that referendum, because he knew that more than 20 years, no one had accomplished what we accomplished. So I was glad to meet him that day, and he said, David, you need to come take the Constitution course, because the problem that we're facing is really much bigger than just these particular issues. And as I took our U.S. Constitution course, I discovered, yes, the problem is enormous, because we have left, in a sense like a ship, we have left the harbor, the design of our founders, and we've gone out to sea. In fact, you could say we've been pushed out to sea so far at this point in time that it's as if nobody can see land anymore. They don't know what constitutional government even looks like. In fact, several generations in the boat have been born and raised and have grown up never seeing land, never seeing the Constitution, never having any idea of what the Constitution says other than it's a piece of paper that...
We got a little freeze there, but I like his analogy where he said that you've got several generations that have been born on this proverbial ship so far away from the mainland, meaning the Constitution, that they have no understanding and practically no knowledge of it. And Pastor Whitney, hopefully get back on, but one of the things he does is he does a Constitution course online. And this year at camp, at our annual family camp, he encouraged people to sign up for it and host classes. I got you covered, even though you're gone for a half a minute or so.
Thank you.
I picked up the
phone
and ran for it. That's all right, it happens. I was just mentioning about your, I love that analogy about the generations born on this. It's almost like, you know, when the Jews were in exile, you know, there were some that had no knowledge of their own homeland. And they eventually coming back. So, yeah, we have generations of Americans who really don't understand the Constitution. And I look at things like, for example, the Federal Reserve Bank. That happened in 1913. There aren't too many people still alive when that thing that were born. I don't think there's anyone alive. A few, they're in their early 110 or so. That was always there. The notion of this paper money, that was always there. Compulsory education laws, which were not done at the federal level, but the state level, wasn't it always that way? You know, abolishing the Department of Education. Well, we've had that thing, since the Jimmy Carter administration, at least at the cabinet position, so it must be a good thing. But all of these slow process of all these federal government is mushrooming. You know, we spent some time in D.C. Actually, I made four trips to D.C., and you're a little whole lot closer than I am.
Yes.
And it's just amazing walking around. You see the Department of this and the Department of that and all of these unconstitutional entities in these gigantic buildings, all of them, all these people working against the interest of liberty and freedom. And when you get a person in office, we'll appoint the right person. We'll make sure we have a conservative to lead the Department of Education or the Department of Homeland Security or FEMA or this group or that group. And the idea is just to abolish it. And when you mention this, they'll get you with horror. You want to abolish this? Why? What would we do without FEMA? What would we do without all these entities? I would think we'd do a whole lot better.
I agree. And so many things. As I think it was the Heritage Foundation did a study looking at everything that the federal government does and evaluated that based on the Constitution and said about 90% of everything done is unconstitutional. It's astonishing. And we the people, because we haven't learned the original standard, don't know what our founders designed, the result is we think, like you say, well, this is okay. You know, we can have this Department of Education. So that image of the boat, we're out to sea, nobody's seen constitutional land, and the rumor that it exists is there on the boat, but nobody knows what it is. And that's what Institute on the Constitution, the AmericanView.com, our website, that's what we exist to do. Reconnect people with the founders' understanding of law and government, which is radically different than what most people today believe government should be about.
That's right. And for example, one of the things you hear conservatives say is that we have to preserve democracy. And that's like preserving a tumor's cancer. Why would you want that? And they say, what? You're against democracy? That's heresy in America in 2022. Well, our founders didn't have a very keen opinion of democracy. If you ever take the time to read the founding documents, the Federalist Papers, and I'm sure you bring this up in your class, James Madison, I think it was Federalist 10, that said that democracies have ever been spectacles of turbulence and contention, short in their lives and violence in violent in their deaths. So why would I want And if you look at Article 4, Section 4 of the Constitution, it says every state is guaranteed a Republican form of government. So what is that? So why don't you tell the viewers what a Republican form of government is supposed to look like?
Thank you, Hal, because founders had an image of what that looks like. And really the question is, where does law come from? You see, in a republic, law is external, it's eternal, it's God's law that's above all human-made law, by which human law has to be evaluated. Whereas in a democracy, it's basically three wolves and one lamb sitting down to lunch table deciding what's going to be on the menu. And we know what the wolves are going to vote for. They're going to vote for lamb chops, right? But in a republic, it's not the vote of the wolves that determines what law is. It's, in our republic in particular, it's God's law, what our founders called the laws of nature and nature's God in the Declaration of Independence. And God's law says, thou shalt not murder. So it doesn't matter if 51% of the people think that murdering babies is a good thing. In a republic, God's law says, no, that's murder, that's against the law, that's against the very purpose for which human civil government exists. So in a republic, in contrast to a democracy, in a republic, the law says no lamb chops on the menu, and furthermore, the lamb is armed. He has his own firearms. He can defend himself against those wolves.
I just priced some lamb chops the other day, $37 a pound. Man, I tell you what, you better have more than one gun because I'm coming for you, lamb.
Good evening.
Our dear friend Reverend Kraft is a big fan of lamb, and I thought I'd gift him a $37. That's just a little too steep for me, but maybe next time we get a little extra cash, I'll go down there and get some. So I'm noticing, though, a lot of people, there's lots of all kinds of different organizations that are out there teaching people about the Constitution, the work that we do. Then you've got Hillsdale College with their program, and you have Chris Ann Hall, you have, of course, Institute on the Constitution. And the place we get our pocket constitutions, I was hoping to find one right here, I could show the audience, but these are little 3.5 by 6.5, 46 pages with the Constitution and the Declaration, and it has some commentary, some quotes, some of the founders and some folks since the founders, what they had said about the Constitution. And one of my famous quotes is John Adams. Now, John Adams was not at the convention, he was in Europe. When he was president, he wrote to a group of militia officers in Massachusetts, and he said that this Constitution is for a religious and moral people, it is wholly inadequate for the governance of any other. And I think that's really the big issue here, because there are a lot of people who aren't Christians or believers or have any religious background, and they look at our Constitution as obsolete. Can you address that issue, by the way? Because it comes up a lot when I discuss the Constitution. They say, oh, well, that old thing. I remember the late Joan Rivers said, that old thing. And then I ask the question, what would you replace it with? And they don't really have an answer. And one of the trick replies is I say, well, look, you think it's obsolete because it was written in 1787. What if it was written in 1848? Would it still be obsolete? And you look at, absolutely. Especially if it was with white European males. Oh, absolutely. I say, well, thank you. You just repealed the Communist Manifesto. So at least we're on the phone. So how do you address this issue that the Constitution is obsolete because it was written and then before an agrarian society 250 years ago?
Well, first of all, they recognized that there would be changes in society, so they provided an amendment process. The fifth article of the Constitution gives the details of how the Constitution can be amended. And it's been amended 27 times over the history of our Constitution, most recently in 1970. So you can't say it's out of date if you can change it when you need to change. But the problem for most people when they're talking this way, they're saying that something fundamental has changed in what the purpose of government should be, and that something fundamental has changed in the character of human nature, because that's what government is dealing with, is the character of human nature. And human nature hasn't changed, not since the Garden of Eden. Man is a fallen, sinful creature, and our founders wisely constructed a system of government that took into account that anybody you elect to office, anybody that's appointed to office, is a sinner, and in essence, they cannot be trusted with unchecked power. You have to have multiple checks and balances. We have a design of four levels of government and three separate branches, all to be check and balance against one another. So the design is beautiful, and it really endured the test of time because it took an account human nature, which has not changed. Now, well, yeah, technology has changed, but the law and the structure that can check the power of those we place into office was designed in a way that would work no matter what age it is in. But you're right in saying that, as John Adams identified, this Constitution was made only for a moral and religious people. By religious, by the way, he was referring to Christians. He was not
right,
referring
exactly.
to faithful Mohammedans or something like that. And so when people are not Christian and people are immoral, you know, you look at the candidates running for office here in my state right now, and many of them are touting their pro-abortion record. You know, they love the murder of babies, and they want more babies to be murdered. That's their bragging point. The reason why you should vote for them is they love murdering babies. Like, wait a minute, that person's not a Christian, and that person is extremely immoral. They're pro-murder. So if you have a citizenship that wants murder, a citizenship that's not Christian, our whole system of government won't work. And perhaps that's what we're seeing. It's failing. It's not working. We've got a gargantuan government in Washington, D.C., just completely out of control, worse than a drunken sailor, because the drunken sailor can only spend the money in his pocket. You know?
That's right.
But they've spent $31 trillion they don't have. Completely
right.
out of control government.
I'm glad you brought up the abortion issue, because the left, the pro-abortion people, tell us that this wicked Supreme Court has taken a woman's right away. And I believe that was based on the 14th Amendment. Now, I've read the 14th Amendment. I am desperately trying to find anything there about abortion. In fact, I think there's only the 13th Amendment, first paragraph. The other ones really deal with punishing the Confederate, former Confederates, correct? Which all
yes.
that is no longer, they're all dead. So that really has no effect. So all it did was basically extend citizenship to those that had been previously I don't think use the word slaves, but servitude. They were involved in voluntary servitude. Is that how it works? So it made the former slaves citizens of the United States and citizens of the states where they reside. But there's nothing in there about privacy, which, by the way, I think you do have a right to privacy, but I don't have the right to, in my room, to kill my wife, you know, make a bomb and go put it in a police station. I don't have that right. So I have the right to privacy. And there are a lot of rights that we have that don't need to be listed. The right of association, the right to travel. But the ones that are listed, of course, are I don't know if they're more important than others. So how did the Supreme Court justices look at the 14th Amendment with a straight face and say, clear as day, there it is right there in the 14th Amendment?
Well, what they did in 1973 is they claimed that there was penumbras and emanations from the Ninth Amendment that somehow indicated a woman had a, quote, right to murder her baby. So the penumbra emanation kind of images when you have an eclipse, there's this shadow and so forth. Anyway, they're claiming that somewhere between the lines of the Constitution and the amendments, particularly the Ninth Amendment, you could find this right to murder a baby. But the problem is their whole theory of where rights come from is wrong. Our founders clearly said in the Declaration of Independence, rights come from God. And the reason the Ninth Amendment exists is basically saying that this Constitution doesn't list all the rights that you have. Why? Because that list of all your rights that come from God are written in His Word, they're written in the Bible. So the Bible is the source of all your rights. So anyone that claims that they have a right to murder a baby needs to find some passage of Scripture that says that's the case. And that's absolutely not the case. In fact, it was so clear that the baby in the womb was to be treated as a human being that the law of God said that if you injured the baby, if two men were fighting and there was a pregnant woman present and somehow this pregnant woman got involved in the altercation. Anyway, an injury took place to her baby in the womb. When that baby was born, the evaluation in court would be, what damage was done to that baby. Did the baby get born with a club foot so it couldn't walk properly, or did the baby lose an eye? And that infamous law that people often criticize, an eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth, is such that if you injured the baby's eye, then your eye was going to have to be injured as well. Because that baby had the right to life. That baby had the right to keep its eyes, and you damaged that baby's rights. So there is no right to abortion. That's a lie that the left has pushed in the, since 1973, the Supreme Court, and recently the Supreme Court turned back. But oddly, they said, this is a decision that the states can make. You know, so the states, some say you can't murder a baby, the other states you say you can murder a baby. But
15
no
weeks,
right to murder
weeks.
A baby.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I think Roe v. Wade, the repeal of it, is a step in the right direction.
Mm-hmm.
And I know some states will definitely put restrictions on abortion, in some cases only in the case of the death of a mother, which I understand from most doctors that I've spoken to is today, thanks to the advance of modern medicine, is very rare indeed. You mentioned the 27 amendments. Of course, two of those amendments cancel each other out, right? The 18th and the 21st. And the 27th Amendment actually would have been, I think, the First Amendment, wasn't it? Because it was part of the original, there was 12 that went out to be ratified and only 10 were. But in I think it was in the early 90s that it was eventually ratified. And it deals with salaries for those for members of Congress.
Correct.
That it wouldn't go into effect to the next session. So they had to get reelected to justify that salary.
Right.
This show in this whole Catching Fire news is the primary focus is to have local activism. So how can local activists harness your incredible wealth of knowledge and be able to make an impact in their community?
Thank you, Hal, because we offer a course on the U.S. Constitution that teaches it from the biblical point of view. That is what our founders' understanding of law and government was. You mentioned there's other groups that teach the Constitution, other groups do good work. Many of them, like Hillsdale College, never make the connection back to the Word of God. We focus on that biblical view of law and government that is absolutely essential, we would claim, to understand the Constitution. Many people misinterpret the Constitution because they divorce the Constitution from the Declaration of Independence. The two have to be studied together. You can't understand the Constitution unless you read it in light of the Declaration of Independence. So our course is available. People can take it online. They can gather a group in the living room maybe and use the DVDs if they choose to do that. You could have a live instructor. I'm actually doing a live course right now with a group in Massachusetts, some that were there at Camp Constitution summer, and those are enjoying that. Pastor Reverend Kraft is part of that class there at the House Church. So we offer a way in which people can study and come to an understanding of the founders' view of law and government, and therefore how the founders understood what the Declaration of Independence was saying, what the Constitution says, what the Bill of Rights means, and also give an understanding as what has happened, because inevitably as I teach the class, people, once they understand the founders' established standard, they say, what happened? Because quite obviously we're not following that today. So we share, here's what happened in pushing us out to sea and basically violating much of what the Constitution requires our civil government to do, and then here's the path back. And so in those 12 lectures, we walk through all of that and then give, here's the plan. And the plan involves, in part, teaching others what you have learned. I've just finished up a class in there in Massachusetts, and several of the students said, wow, I cannot believe all that I learned in this 12 weeks. It's an amazing journey, because when we go back to what our founders actually said and what they actually meant, it's radically different from the way everyone assumes, you know, like the assumption between Republican and democracy, everyone assumes this is the way it's supposed to be done, and it's not. So we can help people take action locally because they know the standard. Until you know the standard, you may wind up going off in the wrong direction. I know there's many conservatives who say, you know, we got to conserve whatever it is they want to conserve. But in essence, no, the conservation of where we're at now is not right. We need to go back to the original standard. We need to go back to the constitutional standard. So before people jump into a program of activism, they got to know what the standard is. They got to be restorationists. That is, we want to restore the Constitution in our society and restore our government to true constitutional republic.
Yeah, I prefer the term constitutionalist, but there are a lot of people out there that call themselves constitutionalists, like they call themselves conservatives, and it really, I mean, Obama used to teach constitutional law, didn't he? That doesn't make him a constitutionalist. You've got Nancy Pelosi. I don't know if she says it with, she says it with a straight face. I don't know if she actually means it or she actually thinks she's really upholding the Constitution. I hear her and I'm thinking, she's not smiling. I don't see that little sarcastic smile. Does she actually think? She probably does. You know, she's deceived herself. I don't know. It's hard for me to understand. I remember Joe Sobrin, the late Joe Sobrin. I was at an event he was speaking and he was talking about Bob Dole. And he said Bob Dole, when he was running for president, used to carry a constitution around with him. He says now that he lost, he'll have a chance to read it because obviously by his voting record, he's never adhered to it. And they all take an oath to the Constitution. And if you're a state official, you're going to take an oath to the state constitution and the U.S. Constitution. And I think state constitutions are very important as well. And it's interesting, the head of the Republican Party in Massachusetts, Jim Lyons, a good guy, I like Jim. And I remember we were in an event where there's some candidates and I said, Jim, do you have any extra state constitutions? I didn't have any with me at the time. He says, no. It's all like, well, isn't that important? Shouldn't the people running for office understand that state constitution? That most people don't even know they have state constitutions. And I look at, well, I'm New Hampshire now. New Hampshire would have had the oldest one, but they had one in the 1776, and then they rescinded that, and they wrote another one in 1782 or three. Meanwhile, Massachusetts got one 1780, and that's the oldest constitution I understand of the whole world. Mm-hmm. And if you, it's been amended so many times, but some of that basic stuff is, and a lot of that stuff looked like it was lifted right out of the, from the state constitution of Massachusetts to the U.S. Constitution.
Yes. You know,
and John Adams played a key role in writing that one. So I think it's important that state constitutions are also part of any study of the U.S. Constitution.
Amen.
But let me ask you a question.
We, by the way, Hal, we are working, one of our projects at Institute on the Constitution is to develop 50 state courses, a state constitution course for each state. And I have a group of people in Massachusetts who are interested. We've completed two of those state constitution courses to date, Maryland and Delaware, but we've got 48 to go. So we have a long uphill road, but we want to have a course on every single state constitution.
Well, there used to be a group in Massachusetts that did just that. I haven't heard from them in a while, but if I could reconnect with them, I will, because they have a course, and I think they're pretty solid, but I used to get their emails. Besides reading the Constitution, is there any book or books that you'd recommend to people who are sort of new to this and would want to learn?
Well, first and foremost, I think we need to read what our founders were reading. They all read the Bible. They knew the Bible very, very thoroughly. Even those who we might say were not Orthodox Christians like Benjamin Franklin, he knew the Bible. He quoted the Bible freely. So we need to read God's word. If you want to read what our founders were reading, you're going to read William Blackstone's Commentaries on the Laws of England. You're going to read Baron Charles Montesquieu, The Spirit
Pastor,
of the Laws.
Pastor, I lost track of time here. We're running out of time.
Oh, okay.
So give us a website.
It's theamericanview.com, theamericanview.com.
Excellent. Okay, you've been watching and listening to the Camp Constitution Report and Camp Constitution Radio with your host, Hal Shurtleff. And until next week, may God richly bless you.